I am Planta on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A new issue of Raincoast Chronicles is out, the 21st, West Coast Wrecks and Other Maritime Tales. Its author, Rick James, joins me now. He is a writer, maritime historian, photographer, and field archaeologist. In this book, you'll read the many stories collected over the years about some of the fascinating and interesting wrecks found along our coast. There are many maritime stories and shipwreck lore in this book. We'll get Mr. James to share some now and tell us about some of the colorful people found in this book. Over the years, Rick James's writing has appeared in The Beaver, The Sea Chest, which is a journal of the Puget Sound Maritime Historical Society, and The Western Mariner. He is the author of the Underwater Archaeological Society of BC's Ghost Ships of Royston and co-author of Historic Shipwrecks of BC Central Coast, Historic Shipwrecks of the Sunshine Coast, and the Comox Valley. Raincoast Chronicles 21, West Coast Wrecks and Other Maritime Tales is from Harbor Publishing. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Rick James. Good morning, Mr. James.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
I won't ask you for your rendition of Super Freak, so don't worry about that.
Oh, my God, I've died. Yeah.
Do you get that all the time?
Yeah, and the peculiar thing is that I haven't had TV for something like 20 years, and I had no idea when somebody young in a restaurant or a motel, I said, "Oh, Rick James, hey?" And I thought, "What's the problem here?" Anyway,
how did this book come about?
What happened was, I had, you know, I started looking through my filing cabinets because I'd been, when I had the chance in the off-season from work, I'd be working up some sort of story about maritime history along the coast here, and I was making submissions. Well, I started out with the Maritime Museum in British Columbia, their journal that actually called The Resolution, and then I moved on to Victoria Times columnist Islander, which is the Monitor today, and submitted some stories, and they were getting accepted. And then I hooked up with what was called at the time West Coast Mariner, and they seemed interested. So, you know, I was writing the odd story over the last 20 years, and then a couple of years ago I opened my file cabinets, and I went, wow, I wonder how much I've got here in the way of stories. And I thought, wow, there's more than I realized, you know, just picking away at it over the last 20 years. Maybe I should approach Harbor Publishing and Howie White and say, maybe we can consider putting a whole pile of these stories together, a compilation, and I think Raincoast Chronicles would be the perfect vehicle for this.
And it has been, hasn't it? I mean, it just seems like the perfect place to have all these stories in there. And it makes it necessary reading for those of us who are interested in BC history and the sort, right?
Yeah, wonderful. It's Harbor Publishing has just been done a wonderful job over the last, must be going on 30 years now, or more. No, it's 40 years. I think they started in the mid-70s. But bringing to the attention, particularly to us that live in British Columbia, that say, hey, we live in a real special place with real special people, and even though, you know, we're not as old as Eastern Canada and, say, Newfoundland, what's happened out here on our coast is pretty special, and we got to need to document it, and I think Harbor Publishing has just done a wonderful job, and I think anybody that's moving here from Alberta or back east, I think it should be required reading to pick up a Raincoast Chronicles at least, or something from Harbor Publishing.
Yeah, this fascination with shipwrecks. I mean, it's been more than 20 years for you, hasn't it?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. When did it begin for you?
Well, of course, my dad. I was brought up as a Navy brat in Victoria, baby boomer, you know, I didn't quite catch on there, but, you know, so I had some sort of maritime background because I'd grown up in that kind of, chief petty officer in the Navy, and I'd done a lot of sports fishing in that, and I'd sort of intrigued by what was happening out in the water. And I can actually recall in the late 50s asking my dad when we were in a sports fishing boat, and I said, look, that's a peculiar barge there that they brought into Port Alberni. looks like an old sailing ship. And he said, yeah, that's what it is. It's an old sailing ship. They cut down into a barge. So I think that sort of stimulated my interest at an early age. And then when I moved to the Comox Valley for the first time, 1971-72, like many here in the Comox Valley, I was always intrigued with this incredible collection of old ships, a hull breakwater for the Comox Logging and Railway Company. And at that time, one could actually walk out on these ships and across their decks and go inside them and whatnot. That fascinated me. That was sort of the Royston collection of hulks. It was sort of the avenue that got me pursuing, maybe a person needs to research and look into this a little more closer and maybe write up and engage the public about, say, hey, this is an important site. So that's basically how that was the stimulus.
And can one go to Royston today?
Yes. Yeah. And I must get it across to the listeners out there. It's an extremely dangerous site.
Yeah.
And it is also private property. You are not to walk out on anywhere out there. What they did, all these ships are in very advanced stage of deterioration. And if you happen to get out there in a low tide and all this rock ballast is dumped on some of these old ships, and if it gives way, you're going to fall through, might get trapped, and guess what happens when the tide comes in?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's best. They're still visible from the beach to an extent. Most of them have collapsed. You know, the bulk of them collapsed. But what's happened up here is it has turned to one fabulous cultural resource for approaching by a kayak and a boat safely, and even for diving, because most of these ships have collapsed and lying on the bottom in relatively shallow water. So it's still quite an attraction.
I missed that. People can dive if they're dive amongst them if they're in the water.
Yeah, on a low tide, it's only in a relatively low tide out there, you could go out there. Some of them are collapsed outwards from the hull breakwater themselves and the rock ballast. And there's actually two or three of them that were set sort of outwards from the outside of them. And they've fallen apart, so you can, put on mass fins and tanks and actually do some really cool exploring of, with the ships falling apart, there's the props, the windlasses, all the ribs laying there. It's an incredibly beautiful sight underwater now, even though it's disappeared mostly from above the water.
Now, the wrecks at Royston, those in particular, they were left there on purpose, right? They didn't just wash up on shore because of an accident or anything like that.
Yeah, of course not. Yeah. No. What happened here, with their logging companies and whatnot, is they, when they, obtained the rights to a certain claim up the coast here, you had to, of course, fall the trees, drop the trees, get them down to tidewater, and that tidewater, once they're in salt water, then the guys had to run around those logs and organize them all into booms so that they could be, or log rafts, so that the wood could be taken to, a sawmill up the Fraser River or somewhere down coast. But many a times when the logging company got a logging claim, they weren't fortunate enough to get a nice wind or weather protected cove or bay or backwater where they could boom and sort the logs. So a couple of places here on the coast, the three most prominent, Royston of course, Powell River, and Kelsey Bay, they had to come up with a solution because these places are very exposed to weather and wind and tide. And, when these guys are running around on their logs trying to sort them out, even though they got cork boots on, when that weather comes up, it's not much fun, as you can well imagine. So what happened with these big forest companies is they come up with a great solution. Let's buy old, abandoned, derelict ships that have been stripped and just put them together like a Lego, make our breakwater out of derelict ships and hulks. And, of course, here at Royston, they scuttled the ships perpendicular from the beach to protect Comox Logging and Railway Company's booming grounds from the southeast weather that roars in the wintertime from the Gulf of Georgia.
So these wrecks are obviously different than the ones that are sunk for divers, right?
Oh, of course, yeah. Most of them are, you know, like the, you can actually, that's what's the, it's neat for people that don't dive.
Yeah.
You can actually go to the beach and look at them. In Powell River, because it's deep water there around their mill, they had to make a floating necklace of hulks. And what's over there in Powell River is 10 concrete ships, because guess what? Concrete doesn't rot or rust, so they're there fairly permanently. Kelsey Bay, they laid the ships out right at the river mouth, and they protect their booming grounds from Johnstone Straits. Yeah.
Well, what's so that?
They're very visible. You can actually, Kelsey Bay is the best place in BC to go and see the last of three Royal Canadian Navy frigates that took part in the Battle of Atlantic. Their metal ships, their frigates, are still holding up reasonably well. Royston, they're totally collapsed.
Yeah. Well, what sets the wrecks on our coast from others elsewhere?
Sets them apart?
Yeah. I mean, reading the book, there's some marvelous stories about the people involved, but other than that, you know, some of these wrecks have seen, you know, battles and the sword and the interesting people, of course, that inhabited the ships.
Yeah, I think because here, you know, you have to put it in perspective here for us on the West Coast. We kind of forget that the best way to approach British Columbia, say up until the Canadian Pacific Railway came in, the best way to approach the coast was from up the coast in the Pacific Ocean. So what happens here, and all trade, commerce, and whatnot, up until the CPR came in by water to, say, Victoria, New Westminster, and eventually Vancouver. So what happened here on our coast is that we ended up with incredible cross-section of shipwrecks along our coast that reflect all sorts of various aspects of technology from the, you know, like mid-19th century and whatnot. Lots of Cape Horn windjammers. Of course, all along the coast here are lumber mills here. A lot of them invested in building their own lumber schooners and barkentines in the early 20th century, late 19th century, to ship their lumber across the Pacific. So there's quite a few of those around. And what's fascinating, like here at Royston, is there's incredible cross-section. There's not only, Cape Horn windjammers and lumber schooners and barkentines and steam tugs. There's a good cross-section of warships that served in the Second World War, not only in our Royal Canadian Navy, but in the United States Navy. And, of course, they served in not only the Battle Atlantic. There's a couple that were, one was that was on the beaches as a rescue vessel at Dunkirk in the spring of 1940. Another, you know, was in the Mediterranean, the invasion of Italy. One that eventually went to the war in the Pacific. It's just a great cross-section of maritime history that we're fortunate to have here.
It also speaks to the coastline and in terms of how treacherous our coastline is here in British Columbia. How does it compare to, say, that in Washington or Oregon, if you're going down this side, or if you're thinking of the east coastline?
I would suggest that actually our coast is actually one of the most dangerous in the world, especially for all the maritime traffic that has to come around Cape Flattery and come in through Juan de Fuca Strait. It's a very dangerous entrance and very tricky. So, of course, that especially with the tides and currents and the weather that blows in and out of the Juan de Fuca Strait, you can end up on a lee shore, which was Vancouver Island. And if you look at, say, Fred Rogers' wreck charts and whatnot, or wreck charts for the coast, you'll see that the west coast of Vancouver Island is littered with wrecks.
Now, Fred Rogers, for people who don't know, you write about him in the book, right?
That's right.
Yeah, and he is who?
Fred Rogers is an incredible personality. He's in his early 90s now and still ticking along really good, but he took it upon himself just as scuba diving was the technology. They were just finally getting it down in the early 50s. He was one of the first ones to figure out, hey, I want to get under the water there and I take a look at some of these wrecks. He'd met this buddy that got him all hyped up about this and had gone into, I don't know, it was Canada Transport in Vancouver or what, but they started looking at some of the reports of what had happened here along the coast, and they were just blown away with the amount of wrecks that were along our coast. So they, Fred, yeah, he learned how to scuba dive basically on his own. He fashioned his own very first tank out of a fire extinguisher he got at a scrapyard somewhere. He's quite the personality. But the best thing about Fred Rogers, he not only took it upon himself to start exploring some of these shipwrecks like many, many people have done, he had the sense to record and document everything he did, and he did it in a very systematic way. So it's all written. He has it all there in his two books. They're out of print now, Shipwrecks of British Columbia and More Shipwrecks of British Columbia. And he's even got all the charts. He worked the whole coast from the mid-50s all the way into the 1970s. They would set out when any time they had some spare time or summer holidays, head up the coast documenting shipwrecks. But like I said, it was all put down and documented, and it's all there for posterity.
There's a great story in the book about Alan Heater.
That's right.
Yeah. Did you mind telling that one?
Okay. What happened here is...
This was in the 30s, I guess, right?
1930s, yeah. The late November, December 1936. Island Tug and Barge Company, it just got off the ground in the mid-20s. But what had happened is Harold Elworthy of Victoria, he was into towing log booms and whatnot for, force companies. And then he noticed, picked up that over in Vancouver there was a couple of barge companies, I think it's British Pacific Barges, and then later Pacific Coil Navigation. And they'd figured out, at this time, there was a lot of old windjammers and sailing schooners all in backwaters in the Fraser River and Lake Union and even in San Francisco Bay. The coming on of the steamship had brought the death knell to the sailing ship. So they're all abandoned, rotting away on anchors. And some of these entrepreneurs have figured out, hey, wait a second, these would make great barges. We just strip the masts off them, get all the rigging off them, open up their hatchways, get out the inside of the vessels, like the tween decks, and we can use them for transporting, coal, ore, or like for here on the coast, wood chips, logs, and hog fuel. And I'm getting around to Harold here, but Pacific Coil didn't do too well. They lost a lot of their barges. And Harold Elworthy in Victoria, saw this as a great opportunity, and he started buying up his own Cape Horn windjammers and lumber schooners in the mid-30s. And Alan Heater, as it happens, was in the right place at the right time. He asked him for a job, and he got a job as a bargee on the old windjammer, the Dunsire, that had been cut down a log barge. And so they headed out up the west coast of Vancouver Island in the fall or early winter of 1936. And, you know, this all sounds very romantic, but I want you to try and envision being on the end of a tow line in these huge Cape Horn windjammers when they're empty. They built a little house on the very stern of them where they kept, where the bargee stayed and managed the, they steered the vessel. Mm-hmm. They had a big wheel there, and they built this house where they, so they could see over the load. But you can imagine, you don't, you have no control over that vessel. The only thing that's keeping you out of trouble is that tow line. And you imagine being in a huge gale in one of these. There's no sound because there's no engine noise. I think they might have had radio control. I'm not sure. There's no radar. You're in the dark, and you get in a big gale. You can't even see your towboat. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they got up there. I've forgotten now. Was it up by? I have to look at that chapter. But up off the west coast, Cape Cook way, when the hawser parted. So they were left adrift in a massive gale, which is pretty frightening.
And so the story about the using the mouth organ?
Yeah. It was great. I interviewed Alan Heater back in 1996, but
yeah.
It's funny how these old mariners, they're so matter-of-fact remembering these incidents, and you well imagine, I think Alan was only about 19 or something at the time, but it looked to them for sure that they were going to end up on the rocks and in a massive gale on the west coast. And it's not like if you get washed up on the west coast in the gale that you can jump ashore. Mm-hmm. You can imagine the surf pounding on those rocks. So
yeah.
Here he is trying to stay cool, keep his shipmates, the other bargees, as they called them, captain of the vessel and another crewman, just try and keep it cool because there was nothing they could do. There was nothing they could do unless they could eventually get somewhere where they could lower the lifeboat and get to a safe harbor. But, he's picked out his mouth organ because there they are. They got no steerage. They got no way to control the vessel. Nothing they can do, so he just brings out his mouth organ and then just starts playing Home Sweet Home just to keep everybody calm.
His book is full of stories like that. Wreck Beach, here in, out of UBC there. Were there wrecks? I've never been there, are there wrecks there now?
Oh, yeah, that's another chapter in the book. That was great investigating that. Why the heck did Wreck Beach become Wreck Beach?
Yeah.
Something to do with wrecks, of course. And some work had already been done, the other members of the Underwater Archaeological Society, BC, and they'd found that there was one small trading vessel that actually wrecked there, was that in the early 20s? But no, there was, what had happened is, just like the Hulk breakwaters here, like at Royston and Powell River, in the late 20s, early 30s, because they were booming logs down there, as they do today, they keep log booms there, but they wanted protection there, so they, found some old hulks that had either wrecked themselves or were derelicts and sunk them intentionally there. And fortunately, we went back there a few years ago to see if there's any remnants of them, and there's nothing to be found. Well, especially what with the log booms out there in the flats where these vessels would have been sunk. I figured there was about four for sure that were there.
Rick, this is a fascinating book, and congratulations on it. Good luck with it.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah. I like I said, it's just one of these things you become obsessed with, and you hope that other people find it as fascinating as yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, you've done a great service, I guess, putting it all to this book. Incidentally, Rick will be giving a presentation at a book launch here in Vancouver, Saturday the 15th of October at 2 p.m. at the Vancouver Maritime Museum. You can get copies of the book there. He'll sign it, and he's got a presentation that he's giving that day. The book is called West Coast Wrecks and Other Maritime Tales. It's Rain Coast Chronicles 21 from Harbor Publishing. It's author Rick James on the line from Courtney in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.